The Dode Fox Podcast.
Welcome to the Dode Fox Podcast. I'm Paul, he's Ronnie, and we've now lost 21 league games this season, conceded 64 goals, yet we can still somehow survive this shit show. A third defeat in a row, another must win on Wednesday, and we'll need something at Fir Park as well. Join the conversation on our socials. We're at Dode Fox Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Coming up on this week's episode, Livingston Review, the good, bad and ugly, Killian Well Preview, the Loan Report, the Women's Team, the Academy, Who Am I? We'll take a look back at Sunday's live show on this day with the Arab Archive, and United fan Gregor Dow is our guest. It's all coming up on episode 195 of the Dode Fox Podcast.
Hi, this is Maurice Malpas and you're listening to the Dode Fox Podcast.
So welcome back to the award-winning Dode Fox Podcast with the living another spaghetti had nightmare, Paul McNichol, and living La Vida Loca, Ronnie Costello. Happy Saturday to you, Paul, for yesterday.
Yeah, well, it was definitely Saturday. I didn't think it was overly happy. 50%.
Grim.
Yeah, awfully grim, yeah.
Yeah, another poor 90 minutes when it was all to play for, a chance to right those wrongs for last week, and we didn't get off to the best start. Now, it's a horrible place to go. We've no one there in the league since about 2005. It was all against her, but sometimes at times this season we've somehow managed to do that, put wee runs together, score four goals a couple of times. We just needed another wee small miracle, a help, a shoe-in to go off of somebody's arse to get 3 points, but it didn't quite go to plan, did it?
It didn't, no. And I don't know about you, but I felt, I mean, you can go back to August, but I felt that it started going off plan as soon as this Fletcher rumour came out midweek. I don't know if it was Thursday, I'm not sure if it was Friday. Whenever it came out, people were getting texts saying that Fletcher's done his groin. And then it got confirmed. It was the courier that confirmed it. And I didn't care about you, Rondo, but I was so pissed off at that news because it's kind of self-inflicted. We knew that we were going into the back end of the season, we just won main striker for whatever reason. I don't know who in their right mind thought that was a good idea. And this was something that could always potentially come and bite us in the arse. And at the tail end of last week, it did. So we travelled through to the tallest team in world football, minus a threat at both ends in the air. So wasn't it travelling through with very much optimism, shall we say?
No, and it didn't go off to the best start, did it?
Well, I mean, I felt that we were all right for the first 10 minutes. Like, I felt there was a purpose about us. I thought, like, there wasn't much quality, granted, but there's not been much quality missed to the season. But at least they looked like they were up for it, and they were going to be putting in a decent level of effort and like a bit of fight. And then we just go and absolutely shoot ourselves in the foot. And I honestly didn't even care what to say about Rondo. I really didn't. There's a couple of people that are at fault for it. There's just two people. But ultimately, I'm going to point my finger at the goalie. I didn't care what he's doing there. He shouldn't have come up for it. He's... When you've seen it back, when I seen it in the moment, I thought, Christ, he's probably coming for that. That's brave, that's bold, but you'll get it. He doesn't. And apparently he shouts to young Aina. Now, he's no one to wipe out his own goalie, does he? So if he gets a shout for the keeper, he's going to kind of step aside a wee bit. You could maybe say he should have dealt with it, or you could maybe say, well, if he steps aside, you maybe step across Bruce Anderson so that he kind of get on it. But it's just Captain Chaos at the back again, and it was just a disaster. Like, I don't again what it felt like watching that on the TV or whenever abroad, clearly. But in the stadium itself, it just took the wind out of Abdi's sails. And it got nasty for about 10, 15 minutes after it within the crowd. Like any time the bar was going anywhere near Birragetti, he was getting booed. Now, of course, I understand it. And internally, I was booing. But I didn't see the point in being so vocal. And he cans. He must can. He's made a howling Noel Hunt of it. The booing him wasn't a great, but like, I get it. Like, I get, I'm as frustrated as anybody watching it. I cannot believe that some of the things that he's done this season. And he's like, we gave him credit the other week, like the Motherwell away game. Like, he done a turn for us, you know? Massive save when we were 1-0 down. And it led to us then building back into that game and going on and winning it. He definitely played a part in something like that. But the amount, we'll get an end of season show eventually in a couple of weeks likely. The amount of goals that he has cost us is absolutely frightening. And I didn't know how to dress it up. I didn't even think I'm being overly harsh. It's just, it was just an absolute kick in the buzz when that moment happened. And it was a punt up the park. It's not even a long pass. It's a clearance. And at the time as well, I thought, well, that's a great finish for the boys. It's a decent finish. I thought he was at a really tight angle. He wasn't that, like, what can you do? Like, the wind come out of the fan sails, that turned angry. But the players, you see, Goodwin was walking away for the dugout shaking his head. What can anyone do when one man takes it upon himself to hit just aberration after aberration when he's got the goalie gloves on? It's unbelievable, Rondo. I don't know how to put it into words. I cannot believe some of the things that I've seen this season for him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, this is a man who's a two-time A-League goalkeeper of the season winner, right? And quite clearly has a mistake in there, because yesterday, there's one. St Johnstone, Stevie May, there's two. Motherwell, when he got recalled, when he flapped in the top of the game, top of the net. Now, forgetting what the result of that game was, but just say we've lost our three. There's more to it than that, but when you're involved in the goals that ultimately lose your game, like the St Johnstone game, single-handedly, was right to the death. Like, it's so, so frustrating. In hindsight, should I either clear his lines? Maybe. But still, if you're coming that long, that far, you have got to get the ball. I say about goalkeepers when they're coming out at the 12-yard at the penalty spot, they have got to win that, regardless of where you are. If you're coming and you're shouting, you've got to get there. How many times have we seen Superman attempts for goalies? Not just your goalie, like in general, and they didn't get there. But when you've got, like you say, a hump up the park, and you've seen it either way, like, one thing about those shitty pitches, you can see the lines. The lines didn't disappear. Like, they didn't get cut up or anything. You came where your box is. And whether it huds up in the last bounce because of the shitey pitch, blah, blah, blah. There's a few things. He shouldn't have come for it, and Aina should just clear it. But Aina, if he gets the shout, then...
Yeah. I think if you break it all down, I think Aina's comfortably dealing with it. I think he's comfortably dealing with it. He's where he needs to be. Yes. He's going to get to the bar first, and he's probably going to hoof it into the car park or at the boy with the harmonica in the Livingston end yesterday. What the fuck was that about? The Neil Young Supporters Club for Almond Bale. But he was getting it, and he was dealing with it. And then this seed of doubt gets planted. This Australian seed of doubt comes running out. And this human calamity, he runs out and then does nothing, Rondo.
No, he doesn't even try to get the boy. Just jokes.
If anything, he assists the boy Anderson by just, I'll put both hands back like somebody's pointing a gun at us, and I'll just not even make any attempt to put him off or get the ball or do anything. It was unbelievable. But the boys couldn't believe what they were seeing yet again.
He makes terrible decisions. He doesn't come for a cross. He barely grabs a cross when he comes for them. Positionally, he's not been great. His starting position isn't been great, you know. And like I say, we've said it so many times, players will get praise when they deserve it. The problem when you're a goalkeeper, when you make a mistake, 9 times out of 10, it leads to a goal. Now, we have seen goalies this season make howling no hunts of it. And I'm talking top level. David De Gea the other week, should keep about, simple shot. That's 1 in 100 mistake he'll make. You know, the Motherwell end when he palms it up and it goes in the goal. I'm 50-50 on it, right? Should do better, I totally get that. But the St Johnstone end, wow. Yesterday, wow. Like, it's just, it's diabolical, like, at times.
And it affects the whole team. It affects the whole team, and it affects the crowd. The St Johnstone game, we had just gotten back into that game. Levitt had just pulled a rabbit out of the hat. I think it was him that scored that game. And the crowd was up. We were on top. Okay, there was only 12 minutes left. I'm not saying that we would have then ran out winners. Who knows? But a couple of minutes later, he goes and does that, and the hell thing's flat again. And yesterday, again, I'm not trying to say that we started like a runaway train, but we were positive. In the position that we were in, with the pressure on our shoulders, I felt we were positive. We were trying to get at them. And then we go and sell the jerseys. We go and give away the simplest of goals. But boys didn't even need to work hard to score against us last 3 games round them. We have given 6 goals away. 6 goals.
You see, Goodwin's interview on DUTV.
No.
How he started that, he just went, pfft. That was enough.
It should have been how he ended it.
Could have stopped it. No. And I think that the same was that, you know, somebody said, I think it was 4 out of 6, but I think all 6 goals have been absolutely dreadful. Diabolical.
Dreadful.
You know.
Of course they have.
A long throw, a free header, just piss poor. Piss poor goals. Yeah. Jordan White looking like prime fucking penalty box striker for 6 yards last week. 3 times.
Dreadful. It's, and like, we got these 3 wins in a row, and we were all like, no on top of the world, but like we were feeling a lot better about things and about ourselves, our chances. And then it's just all come crashing back down. Like, it's now 3 meek defeats. It's just dreadful. And again, I said it last week, it's very hard to be positive on what you've seen, because even if they put in an effort and they put in a performance and an effort, we've still got him in the goal. You don't know what you're going to get. He might have a good game, but the likelihood is he win it. The likelihood is he's going to do something that's going to cause a wee bit of chaos at the back, and that'll just worry Abdi. And as I said, boys were booing him, and that's no helpful. Like, it's never helpful booing any of your players at any stage of the game, even after that. It's not something I ever do. But I completely understand it. Like, all season, boys have parted with good cash to go and watch this team. Look at the numbers again yesterday that supported the team through there. But more fans than them. Now, again, that's not a high bar, but how... It's so frustrating, Rondo.
2,600 really there yesterday. 1,600 United fans.
Yeah. It's... And what did we get for it? Nothing. Roundly ridiculed for Abdi Alston Scottish football, because we've hired a circus act for a keeper.
And it could have been worse. Could have been 2-0.
Yeah. Well, at first I thought it was offside when I was there, but then it came on the guy that was doing the VAR, which, again, he must have been watching the game on IPTV, because he was just as slow as he was the last time. But he said they were checking it for handball. And at the time, I hate to be honest, I never saw any handball, but having watched it back on Sports Scene, yes, it does. I mean, we're fortunate, because it's not like the boy does it on purpose. I think he jumps up and it hits his hand, but like, in fairness, like, it has hit his hand and fell right at his teammate's foot, and he's put it through the keeper's legs.
Dodged
the bullet.
Were you thinking, oh no? Or were you pretty convinced it was offside, so you weren't really...
I thought, well... Yeah, but it seemed to take a wee while. Plus, like when the guy said, "Oh, we're checking a handball," I was like, "Christ, maybe it's no offside." Then I never seen a handball, so my head was still up my ass at that point because I was still trying to process what had happened in the 11th minute. So I didn't care if I was worried or not. I think I was still in shock.
And then after that, it seemed to be a back and forward first opening 20 minutes. We get ourselves back level.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, it wasn't the most easy on the eye goal. You know, it was a bar into no man's or into space for Rory McLeod to then just simply hoof it back over his head. And then there was a challenge for McGrath in the box. And then Harks with a great finish, an absolutely great finish. And I felt like we deserved it. Like, we didn't really overly trouble the their keeper, but I felt like we deserved it. There was definitely effort there for the players yesterday. And we got ourselves back on level terms, deservedly so.
But that's only a week later. I told him last week I fancied a goal for him.
Well, but we need more goals for him. There's only two games left. We're needing double hat tricks here.
Double tens, double hat tricks. So, deservedly, in your opinion, we're back level for the 20 minutes. How did the rest of the first half pan out?
I mean, it wasn't the best game. I didn't think that they were overly troubling. I thought Niskanen was doing a very, very good job on Nubly. He certainly wasn't backing down for the challenge anyway, because that boy is an absolute giant. But a lot of the time it was quite frustrating. I didn't really think we tested them much. There was times when you get in behind them and then you're thinking, right, there's nobody in the box here. What we're going to do? There was a lot of buzz played up to young Rory, and the boy must be about my height that was marking him. It's just food and drink to him, you know. It's easy when you play a hair bar up. You've got to get the ball on the deck. I don't think we've done that often enough yesterday. So yeah, like, we got to half time. In my opinion, I think being in at level terms was probably merited, but it was far from a good game. Effort might have been there, but performance, it wasn't the best performance, I thought.
At that point at half time, would you have took the point and moved on?
Nah, we kind of, like, obviously the way the results went, a point would have been better than nothing. But nah, we hit a win. Like, you hit a win, games, Rundle. Points are no good just now. They really aren't.
I would come out into the second half, which you've got a massive 45 minutes ahead. Did we start the half as well as we could have? Did we get our foot on the ball? Did we stamp our authority? Because only 50 minutes into it, we're back behind again.
Yeah. I maybe would have taken Middleton off yesterday. He's not fit. It's no any sort of criticism at all. He's no fit. But that's what we're going to rely on, boys that are no fit, half fit, Burns. So I maybe would have taken him off maybe at halftime. I didn't think he was his usual self. And it was, again, it was a game where I didn't really feel that there was much in it. I thought that they were always going to be dangerous against our back line. Not because they were particularly great, but just because of our back line. We weren't offering that much going forward. It was very, very slow and laboured, I felt. Playing into their hands again, like we've done the last 2 weeks. We all hoped that, all right, Fletcher, so that's, some boys were of the opinion, well, that's fine, we'll let it play differently. Didn't play that differently. And then the goal itself, what an absolute shambles. It's...
Again.
It's unbelievable. Like, Mulgrew, he's had two attempts just to kick it as far away from you as you can, because when the bar's near you and your defensive buddies, that's when problems arise and have our season. But he puts the first in straight in the air and somehow gets lucky because it comes back to him, and he puts that in straight in the air again. And then two headers later and the boy's pinging it in the bottom corner. Just... I mean, what can you do? Like, Birigetti, I think we're all of the opinion, and it's horrible to say that because he's getting another criticism, but it's very hard to not criticise what we've seen. But Mulgrew's an experienced player with a wand of a left foot that he couldn't use to lump the bar up the park on that occasion. and he couldn't use his chocolate right foot to do it either. So we then found ourselves 2-1 down. And it was big trouble at that point. It was big trouble because like you looked and you thought, well, or I personally thought, look, boys have put in a fair effort. We're getting tired now. What have we got on the bench? Miller, Thompson, Kai, Cujo. I mean, I've told you before on this and probably privately, Miller Thompson's a really good player. He's a really good prospect. But I'm not comfortable relying on him in the midst of a relegation battle. That, to me, it's no fair on the laddie. I mean, he'll probably view it as it's an opportunity for him, and it is. But as a fan that travels the length and breadth of the country to watch this not cheaply assembled squad, it's an indictment on what has went on before this season. The accumulation of these players and putting this squad together that we are now having to rely on, like Miller Thompson coming off the bench, and he's a good player. He'll be a good player in time. Starting the game with Rory McLeod up front. I don't even care if Rory McLeod's a striker. He's a good player. But I think kind of he's a striker. And that's what we're doing. We joked about it the other week when Goodwin was getting 3 wins and we were saying, well, we're doing it the bare bones. And we weren't really, but I think we're doing the bare bones now. I really do.
100%. I mean, the news during the week that Stephen Fletcher was even a doubt at the time and then misses out just shows you, like, Rory McLeod's a good player. But when you've said he's up against two gents at the back, you're like, listen, he put a shift in for what I seen. You
of course
know?
He did.
I mean, it's hard watching it out of the country and that, but you know, he puts a shift in, naturally fades out the game. Miller Thompson comes on, but then, like you say, we then end up with Paula on, Levitt on, Fallon on, Cujo on. So 3 young boys have come on, plus 2 boys just back for injury, you know. And when you look at that's where the final throw of the dice comes to the young boys. And that's literally given, like you said, the cost of the squad put together. But it just brings us back every single time to an absolute clusterfuck of a January transfer window.
Yeah, of course. And like, I'd rather not go over that nonsense just now. I think that we're probably best saving that for the end of the season when it's the rant of all rants. But you're right, I said to you at the time, and I think we maybe even disagreed a wee bit, we certainly didn't disagree about the striker. Like, to put out Tony Watt, well, fair enough, if you're putting him out because he's this, he's that, he's the next thing, whatever. Like, totally understandable. But you must replace him. You have to bring somebody in. To not bring somebody in was, in a sporting way, criminal. It really was. It was absolute buffoonery for the decision makers that have decided we're not going to replace that guy. And me personally, I would not have put the star of the loan report, Carl Johan Eriksson, out on loan either. Like he's doing something miles away that he could be doing here. He could have been sat on the bench. He could have been putting a wee bit of pressure on Barragetti. He could have been in the fucking goals, because what we're getting just now for Barragetti the last wee while, like we thought his performances had picked up.
Listen, but I remember watching Eriksson at Fir Park away when he saved the penalty. He was really good that day. Really good that day.
He had a decent day that day, and the game at home that I missed earlier in the season against Hibs, I would say he kept us in that game.
Yeah.
Now, the save for Kevin Van Veen aside, through at Motherwell when we beat them recently 2-1, I can't think of any other time Barragetti's kept us in the game. And maybe I'm being harsh, maybe I'm just a prisoner of the moment and I'm sitting here the day after the fact that he's sell the jerseys again. But I mean, bottom line, I don't think either keeper is good enough. Personally, I don't see how our much vaunted recruitment team have scoured all the ends of the earth and come up with these two. How they've not found a better keeper, I don't know. But to leave ourselves so short across the board, it's been a disaster, Rondo. It has been an absolute sporting disaster this season. It really, really has. People should get a foot up their arse for what's gone on here.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that so much has been on the shoulders of Stephen Fletcher this season.
Yeah.
Given up until January, there was at least backup slash competition and what have you. But then he goes at the team and then you're really seeing what we're dealt with, you know. I mean, this is a player that, you know, yeah, he's just turned 36, right, at the end of March, but has played this season, I don't know, about 35 games or something, probably in total.
The thing is, Rondo, see, even if he was 26 and he'd never been injured before in his career, you still kind of rely on one man to get you through at the end of the season. He's the role that he performs in Scottish football, like, he comes up against big bruisers all the time. The likelihood of picking up an injury is probably quite high. We've went from January to now, and you know what? He's been poor the last two games prior to this injury. And I wouldn't be surprised if it came out in the fullness of time that he's actually been carrying that injury, because he has been a wee bit of doing off his levels. It's just an absolute shambles. But, and there's a big but, amazingly, we can still somehow get out of this. And I kind of for the life of me believe that. We've been so, so bad this season. And yet there's two games left. One of them at home, one of them away at probably the most difficult place that we could have been asked to go. Mm-hmm. It's still somehow doable. But that's not to say I believe that it will be done.
And that's also, it's also going to a place on the last day of the season that we've not been better at this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
as I know. The strangeness of football.
Yeah, but I mean, that game counts for nothing.
No.
If you make a howling arse of Wednesday.
100%.
Like we have said, we said for weeks now, this is a must-win game. This is a must-win game. Wednesday literally is a must-win game.
Yeah.
Anything else, and we're absolutely Donald Ducked.
Certainly for... thank you very much to the work DUFC Stats clearly put in on their Saturday night last night. Basically, the way it goes, we've no finish with the game. We'll come back to it, but we're on a bit of a tangent at the moment. If United beat Kilmarnock, it will remain in our own hands going into the final day, which basically means what happens in the Ross County St Johnstone game. There's lots of permutations of how things can work. It actually stays in our hands if we draw on Wednesday and St Johnstone beat County in Dingwall. A win at Fir Park would then be enough. If we draw and Ross County get something, then we'd need to win at Fir Park and need favours. If we lose against Kilmarnock, we could mathematically be relegated on Wednesday night. We are as good as down with defeat unless County lose their last two matches.
Yeah, you think that's going to happen?
For how shite of a season it's been, the up and down roller coaster, as we always mention, to somehow, with two games to go, still be 3 points for safety or 3 points for staying in it. I just can't believe it, man. I genuinely can't believe it.
There are three dreadful teams in this league, and at present, we are the worst of this three. Mm-hmm. And we have got a week, the biggest week at the club for years, to save ourselves. And we have probably got nae Stephen Fletcher. We've got a Bairn up front. We've got Bairns on the bench. We've got our World Cup star sitting in the stand.
We'll get to him.
We will get to him. It's against all odds. Like, it really is. So, you'd be a brave man to put money on this.
So Wednesday, we win on Wednesday.
We can.
All right. What's happening in the Ross County St Johnstone game? And I'll tell you what happens.
Up in Dingwall?
Yes.
I don't think St Johnstone lose. So we'll say a draw.
So if United were to win that and it was a draw up there, it would still be in our hands and we would all be on 34 points. Given they two play each other on Sunday.
Yeah.
And we go to obviously to Fir Park. So it's a massive sort of thing.
We have to win. We have to win. I know all the permutations. We have to win.
We have to win.
It doesn't even matter if there's no Stephen Fletcher. It doesn't matter if there's no Beach. You've got to find a way to win this game at all costs.
Put it this way, we have to win to have a chance of even finishing 10th. If we draw, 11th's the best we can hope for.
I think you've got to win. Regardless of anything else that might happen, you hate to take care of your own business. And I've said that for the last few weeks, and we have not taken care of any business. We have gifted goals to the opposition, shot ourselves in the foot, and here we are, still bottom of the league, 2 points adrift with two games left. It's ridiculous, Rondo. It's ridiculous. Absolutely shambolic that we have got this squad, this probably relatively high earning squad. It's not like a Livingston side where probably got quite a low wage bill and whatever, and they wouldn't be happy about being in our position. But if they were other teams, you could look and say, well, like, what do you expect? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at United and saying, what do I expect? A damn sight more than what we've been getting our season.
We've said that a million times. We're so imbalanced.
I'm so embarrassed. I cannot believe some of the things that I've seen from my team this season. Honestly, I really can't. All will be forgiven if you win the next two games and stay up. But I'm just not convinced. 21 defeats in the league in one season with two games left. It's shocking.
Well, I mean, even this calendar year, we've won four league games this calendar year. Bearing in mind, we've only won eight our season, I think it is. Maybe even seven. But we've had only three draws in that time. The rest have been defeats.
Yeah.
That's like 11 defeats or something. It's ridiculous, man.
It is ridiculous.
And again, we've said it, and we hate going on about it, whatever. But again, we're stuck by Liam Fox too long as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, if this all goes pear-shaped, we're going to get to the end of the season and there's going to be a lot of anger towards the players, because that's three managers that couldn't get a tune of them. Mm-hmm. Like, if the worst happens, that'll be three managers that couldn't get a tune of them. Now, Fox had the missed amount of time, I suppose, to try and get a tune out of them, and he just couldn't. And I think looking for the outside in, like, most people were of the opinion, this boy can't cut it as a manager. And I know that we're not a party to everything that goes on. He maybe done his best. You know, I dare say he did do his best, but it came up short most weeks. The way he spoke about the games, the way he was after the games, before the games, it inspired nobody. And whether or not that means anything to the players, I don't know. But fans listening in, can human sleeping pill at times. Jim Goodwin at least came in. None of the players that are here he brought in. There must be players that he's looking at thinking, I can't believe this club signed that guy. Must be. He's not going to say it. He'll never openly admit that. But there's got to be. And like we thought that he'd lifted us. It's maybe kind of leveled out a bit now, because like we are where we are because we deserve to be here.
Well, he's had 10 games now, right, Ben? His first seven, he'd won three, drew two, and lost two. And at that time, we said the two he'd lost were to real form teams.
Aberdeen Rangers.
Yeah, the last three games, and people could point at, subs should be made early. I just look at the bench and go, the throw of the dice is the young lads. You know, and yeah, it's to go for it and whatever else, but you can't. I gotta get
a lot of the criticism and comes from frustration, I think. Like, some people will just not like him, I get that. Mm-hmm. Some people will like him, but boys are just frustrated. Like, I was personally yesterday, but like, I was a wee bit critical of him because we had a corner and he took off Mulgrew and put on Cujo, and I couldn't for the life of. Like, I can maybe understand that change, but no one have got a corner. I just didn't understand that. But, like, I'm splitting hairs. Would it have mattered? Probably not. Would a Mulgrew have got on Endo and put it in the net? Probably not. But I just thought that was... But you as a fan, you analyse everything. You're over-analysing everything sometimes. Certainly we do when we speak about it on this. But I'm quite similar to you. Like, I don't know what more he could do. Like, What can he do? I think he made an error last week going to a back three. But what is he seeing in training that we are not seeing? I don't think he rates Edwards. I'll say that much. He might say he does, but played in the Aberdeen game, then dropped out. Had to play him last week, and then he's back dropped out. So I just, you reap what you sow, you know. It's we are where we are, and come this time next week, we may still be here unless we can turn all around on Wednesday night. We keep saying it. Not even finished speaking about the Livingston game, but we keep saying it because it's just on it's in the forefront of my mind. We've got to beat Kilmarnock at home. We have to beat Kilmarnock at home. They're no great shakes, and again, we're no great shakes. But anything else doesn't get it done for us. I would say that we're doing it for doing a bit of them.
Aziz Bitch.
Yeah. So you could look at that and you could say he's an absolute idiot for the two bookings. I look at it, and as somebody that was watching the game, pitch side, I can tell you how annoying and how frustrating it was that these guys were going doing it the drop of a hat, time wasting, throwing extra bars on the park. Just general shithousery. General shithousery. Tatting the piss out of the ref. He then goes in for a challenge. And it's just a challenge. It's nothing in it, really. Boy goes doing like somebody's hitting me an axe to the shin. And Beach is obviously, he's a fiery Australian. I think we all know what he's like. And he has a few choice words with him. And the boy's up and the boy runs away. And Beach gets booked for that. So it probably was a daft thing. But I could completely understand where it came from. Should he have done it? Nah. But I was losing my shit at the boy, so I get it. The second one, I said to you before we hit record, I didn't even see it because it was the boy trying to be a smart ass and ballooted it off of Beach. Now, I'm not even sure if it hit Beach or no on the way out, but when he done it, I was looking down at the linesman to see what way he was giving the throw. And by the time the linesman made a decision and put his flag up, I then turned back. And there's a red curb in the referee's hand pointing at Beach. So at the time, I didn't even see it. I've since seen it back. And he collapsed twice, maybe. But then that's one of the decisions. Again, you could look at that and say, fucking idiot, what did he do that for? But no Abdi that does that gets a booking. So it's the ref's interpretation. Did the ref send him off there, really? Really? I don't think so. Like the fact that he's booked him a couple of times and know that many minutes. I think it's for me, it was not a red card. I didn't think. Is he daft? A wee bit. Is it piss poor refereeing in that moment? I would say so.
I think if it was, if that had happened in another kind of gig, in the West, I don't think a red card would have put it that way.
It comes down to interpretation. And I tell you what I don't think. Like if you simulate contact, if you dive, I think that is a booking, is it no? Boy Anderson's brilliant at simulating contact. The boy that came on the left, I can't mean his name, but he was throwing his cell out of the place as well. These boys didn't get booked, didn't I think? But again, like if you want to be critical, he shouldn't have done it. He shouldn't have gotten the boy's fist. I get why he done it, but he shouldn't have done it. And he shouldn't have applauded or clapped once or twice, however, whatever he's done. He shouldn't have done it. He got caught. The ref's obviously sleeping on the couch the night before. And he was in a mood and he sent him off.
Yeah, no half. So, summed up the game. We've looked ahead to what is now a massive week of two games. Given that by 10 o'clock on Wednesday, it could be done and dusted before you even need to go to Motherwell. But let's hope that's not the case and we could somehow retract fingers out of arseholes and get 3 points. A massive week that it is ahead for the club. Anything else you want to add before we move on, Paul, and get your good, bad and ugly?
Just that Wednesday's a bit of a worry. Like I think Kilmarnock, I've said they're no great shakes. They're from what I've seen this season, they're really poor at defending set pieces. Well, they're in luck on Wednesday because we are really shite at doing anything face set pieces. It's just going to be really difficult. It really is. They've got a half decent keeper. We dunno. That might be the difference. That may very well be the difference.
All right, let's get your good, bad, and ugly.
Really not much to this week, Rondo. The good, Ross County and Kelly both lost. That's it. And I suppose it was good to see Levitt back. The bad, a few weeks ago we may have won three on the bounce. Well, we've now lost three on the bounce, and we're basically on life support just now. And the ugly, well, the squad that we've been left with as a result of the worst January transfer window decisions that I can ever remember. Now, you could argue the one at the start of the season is the one where we set ourselves up on the wrong path, but by January, everyone could see that reinforcements were badly needed. Yet we entered February in a much worse position than anyone could have ever imagined, and hence what we're seeing on the park at present, Rondo. It's just, it's as ugly as it gets. A complete and utter shambles.
Couldn't have put it any better myself. Right, I did say to Paul before we hit record, is there actually a loan report? And he says, of course there is. I love doing this for everyone that listens. So here we go. The women's team, who we'll hear about, they're in their final game of the season, fingers crossed. The Academy, and you'll start with our one man out on loan.
Carl Johan Eriksen at Nordsjælland. Last week, Eriksen was in his familiar role of unused sub as his side could only draw 1-1 away to AGF. This Monday night, they will face Randers at home as they battle to win the league. He'll likely be on the bench again. The Academy team. The Academy lads had two games this past week and they would rack up two wins. The first one was a hard-fought win away at Hamilton, where 15-year-old frontman Owen Sturton was the match winner. Then on Friday afternoon, they'd welcome Hertz to Gussie and smash them 2-1, with Stuart Heenan notching both goals. That makes it 9 undefeated for the young team. The women's team. Last Sunday, Glasgow Girls came calling, and it was a game that United simply had to win. Glasgow Girls are a poor, poor side, and they haven't picked up so much as a point this season. In truth, they're dreadful. It would be easy work for the team as they racked up 5 goals without reply to canter to a comfortable win. The goals on the day were scored by Georgie Robb, Jade McLaren double, Danny McGinley, of course, and Rachel Todd. Unfortunately for the ladies, Hamilton would also win their game, so that means that the last game of the season, today as we are recording this, has plenty riding on it. Hamilton will be the visitors to Gussie, and they have to win to avoid the relegation playoff games. All United have to do is simply avoid defeat, and they will have kept their top flight status at the end of their first season in the league. Come on, United.
Indeed, the over-50s Walking Football East Region Championship. Steve Ross took the weekend off last weekend. He wasn't feeling too well, so he missed out on the Walking Football. He missed out on the live show as well, which I've heard people say that, aside from being there in 1983, it was the best night of their lives, but we'll get to that in a second. But we do have some notes from the Championship League that took place. And last Sunday at the RPC, it was Mark Scott, Derek Gary, Andy, Jimmy Mack, John and Neil who all took part. The first game was against Wraith, and it was an early goal for Wraith. They won 1-0 by the looks of it. We did get ourselves back on track, I should say, and it finished 1-1 at full time. We didn't start the game that well, probably lucky to draw, but the boys were determined and worked really hard. Second game was against Luncurty. Andy Elwood notched another customary quality finish, and the author, there's a brilliant line in this, it says, author was playing, so no report, but we kept possession well and probably should have scored more. A deserved if narrow win. So we won 1-0 in that one. Third game against Carnoustie. It was easy. We won 4-0. Lads got in their stride in the game. Played and scored some well-worked goals and some quality football as well. Fourth game was against Saints in the Community. There seemed to be a lot going on. We got a penalty. And guess what we missed?
Of course we did.
Saints did go 1-0 ahead. It was questionable though, Paul, because he was in his own half, and going by the rules, that's not allowed. Ref didn't change his mind. We then got another penalty and we scored 1-1. Finished 1-1, which means that halfway through the campaign, DUCT are clear at the top, by 3 points and got a positive goal difference. So well done to the lads last weekend. That's the over 50s East Region Championship League. If you would like more information on the Walker football and all that kind of good stuff, you can head on to dundeeunitedct.co.uk. And of course, the foundation always looking for new members. If you'd like to sign up and or just find out more information, you go to dusf.scot. So we're into squeaky bum time on Who Am I at the moment. Paul just throws his arms up as if to say, don't really care. It's 33-29 right now.
But I think you've won because obviously you're 4 points ahead.
You're 5 points a day.
But then it's you next week and then that's it. So I actually think you've had a week more, but I really didn't care. I would just actually accept not doing it.
This is for the people's enjoyment.
By the way, Uncle Billy was not happy with you again.
What for now?
He said, Ronnie's clues the other week. What were they about? I was like, Neil Heaney. He was like, he says, I can't even mind him. I was like, it was you that took me to that game, Uncle Billy. He says, I think I was through at your house at the weekend because he used to stay in Livingston.
Honestly.
I think we maybe went to a gig or something. I can't even mind, but we were through there for the weekend, went to that game. I was like, mind, we wore green strips. Neil Heaney, Devon had their own goal. He was like, no, I have no recollection of that
so,
player.
So how
all.
Was his shite memory in the day with Matt Clues?
You're picking random players he doesn't can, so... But you're lucky he never pulled you up last week at the live show because I thought he was going to...
Shot it, didn't he? He was walking up the stairs.
No, I don't think he shot it. I think he was... He just didn't want to send you him limping with your fat lap. So that's what happened.
Limping with your fat lap.
Limping with your fat lap.
That's a new one. That's
a really fat lap.
That's a new one. Yeah. Well, good luck to Uncle Billy the day with these clues. And to the bit of you, get up, yeah. Clue number one, which I think will give you 5 points, Paul. I've written it to make it so easy.
Cool.
This week's player has the most subbed on appearances for United.
Wow. What has there been, 114 years of Dundee United history? The most subbed on appearances. Well, I'll tell you what, it's not Davy Neary, because he only got subbed about three times or something. Again, that much. Miss subbed on appearances. Why is an eternal sub? I've no idea. Because I didn't even ken what sort of what time frame we're looking at.
Are we moving on?
Davy Dodds.
It's good.
But it's nowhere near.
But it's not right.
I put 30 years out or something.
Clue number two for an easy 4 points. This is a gimme. This is a gimme. I thought that was a gimme. This is a gimme.
You would, yeah.
While at United, he was linked with a £1 million transfer to Spurs.
Spurs? Jeezy peeps. I think Heggie told me that he was linked with Spurs at one point, but big Jim, wee Jim didn't tell him. Boney must have been a sub quite a lot. Big Hoss, John Clark sub a lot. I've none. But I don't care what era we're looking at. I'm
moving
going
on.
Over 40 years. We're going to move on, Ron.
Clue number three. Here's a gimme. Competitive debut as a substitute in a UEFA Cup tie against Viking Stavanger. He went on to make 329 appearances, scoring 37 goals.
Right, I can't what is.
What is it?
is John Clark.
Correct!
Because we spoke to him. He's the most subbed. What does that mean? He was on the bench.
He's the most subbed on player,
subbed
according
on player.
To the Arab Archive, with 77. He is just ahead of Danny Swanson with 70. And I'm sure around about there, Ralph Milne's in around about the 60s, and somebody else is about Andy McLaren. There you go.
Yeah.
John Clark.
Oh, man.
Clue number four, he was inducted in the United Hall of Fame in 2010. And clue number five, he is always known for the scales.
Yeah. The first two clues were difficult, Rondo.
She hens, man.
I'm still thinking at 83. That's how I went, Davy Dodds.
Yeah, there you go.
And then I was thinking Boney and John Clark, but 77 sub appearances. Wow.
Yeah, crazy. But again, 329 appearances.
Yeah, but 77 for the bench.
77 for the bench. Yeah. So there you go. There you go. Who am I? Be back for the final time next week.
Not wanna be. You've won. You're a point ahead, and there's only you to do it.
Right. Fine. Yes. Anyway, Sunday night was a live show. How was it for you?
It was good. It was really good. Quite anxious the closer it got. Quite anxious actually doing it for some reason. But it was brilliant. Like, again, like we say it all the time, getting to speak to these guys, getting to share that day of all days with them. They brought their families along. The feedback that we had from the legends and from people that were in the audience, it seemingly went very well. I think me and you have said it before, when you're actually doing the thing, when you're actually sitting on the stage asking the questions, and let's be honest, it's not really a talent, we're just asking questions, it's very hard to gauge how well it's going. Like, is Abdi quiet because they fell asleep? Is Abdi quiet because they're listening to Hamish's funny stories? You know, it's hard to gauge it, but it was an absolute thrill to be on the stage with the guys, to be backstage with the guys. And the one thing that comes through is their love for United to this day. And more so for the fans. Like, Heggy is so appreciative. Heggy, it's bizarre because he says to me, I can't believe that the fans still remember me. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, you are Paul Hegarty. you will never be forgotten at Tannadice. And that seems to be the thing, you know, amongst them all. They're all very, very humble guys, which is fantastic. Like, it's brilliant, but it's just, I find it unbelievable. Like, because these guys are, you know, hero status. Like, they were heroes when I was a Bairn, and now that I'm Noah Bairn, big, bald, ugly, and specky, and old, and it's, they're still worthy of my hero status, you know. They're absolutely great guys, and it was a privilege and a pleasure to share that night with them.
Yeah, and the big thing was that they really seemed to enjoy it as well. And that's always, I think for us, I think we've been very lucky with our guests. You know, I think we've said it a few times, maybe not as publicly, but, you know, the only guest we've had that's ever been on a time limit with us was actually Steve Dykstra, because his tea was going to be on the table in 45 minutes. And I think the interview does go slightly longer than that, but he's the only one that's ever really had a time limit. You know, no one's been up against it. No one's been, you know, getting the feeling during that you've not really wanted to do it. Obviously, a lot of people, you know, we've never met a lot of these guys, or if we have, it's been asking for an autograph when we were 30. But that's kind of what comes, and we've been very lucky, and we've said it a few times that, you know, COVID was a horrible time for us in the world, but it was great for us because a lot of people were twiddling their thumbs. But, you know, to speak to guys like, you know, your Johnny Russells, to your Andy Grays, to, you know, Ryan Golds, to everyone, not one of them. You know, I had a bit of a laugh this week when I read that Ryan Gold was on like 36 grand a week or something, and I thought, he was just laying in his bed chatting to us about eating Malwan pinballs like a couple of years ago. Like, it's incredible. Like, it's still, it's still really funny. And you know, Johnny Russell's got his daughter playing in a band behind when we were playing, and, you know, and or John Rankin or Sean Dunn, like all these guys, and Lee Wilkes and everything. They not one of them has ever, you know, ever had a time limit on us, or I've never felt, and they're hating this or no enjoying this or anything.
There's also never been anything that they've said, didn't I ask us that?
Yeah.
Nobody's ever. But it's always like an open book, you know, open invitation, speak about what you want, tat as long as you want.
Yeah.
And it was no diff. I mean, if anything, it was us that had to kind of wrap it up last week. We were the ends of the time limit, Rondo. We were the ends that hit a gaff that stage by about 10:30 at the latest. And like when you've got the Q&A that we had last week and there was loads of good questions, and unfortunately there was loads of good questions that didn't get asked because you were saying, right, Hamish, boom, this is the question. And then he'd answer it very well. And then Super Mo would answer it. And then Heggy would have his hand up saying, I want to speak about this and that. So there wasn't as many questions got asked in the Q&A as normally happens, but it was absolutely brilliant. Like, I'm still a fanboy when it comes to these guys. Like, I could just listen to them speak a day about whatever they want to speak about. A particularly touching moment was when they were speaking about Walter Smith, and they all had their own wee unique story about, well, Walter was a great man because of this, and Boney had like a different angle, and Malpass said, well, I kent him through Scotland and whatever else, and he just came across absolutely brilliant. But the night itself, tremendous. Hamish and Super Mo should be a double act on stage themselves. I would pay to see that. And the other guys were fantastic too.
Thank you very much to everyone who bought raffle tickets as well on the night. £2 a ticket for some great prizes in there. We obviously swapped out the goodie bag for the really nice United Tartan goodie bag, which was much better. But we had signed prints of all our guests, plus we had a signed print from Dave Neary. We had a signed 1983 print from the five guests plus Dave Neary as well. And again, to everyone that does that, we said that it allows us then to make, you know, a donation towards what was the food banks, who do amazing work on match days for both United and Dundee. And because of your generosity in buying the tickets, it allowed us to make a £500 donation this week to those guys, which is just phenomenal for the work they did. And hopefully it allows them to, you know, to put that to whatever use they need to make a work, you know, in 2023 to be surviving on food banks that some people are, and a cost of living crisis and the bills and everything going up, you know, it's hopefully it's they can make that, you know, make a real difference to some people in doing that. So we appreciate that. That comes from all you guys paying, you know, £2 a ticket to win some great stuff as well, but really commit to a brilliant cause as well in being the food banks as well. So thank you very much to everyone who bought them, let's say £500 to the food banks.
That's amazing. It's amazing. We shouldn't need these things, but we do, sadly. And the guys that run the fan support and food banks are brilliant. You know, they work tirelessly, and they're doing a great thing. Unfortunately, it has to happen, but they're doing a great thing.
So episode 195 brings us another fan guest of the season. Gregor Dow joins us. Gregor, how are you?
Okay. Consider all things yesterday's result, I'm not bad. How are you guys?
Well, you've turned up. And that's the main thing.
You're here.
I've got to have a better eye. Yep, exactly.
Listen, there's a few things to talk about, but let's take a back, as we always like to. Take us right back to how you fell into this illustrious love that we call Dundee United.
1986-87 season. I was 7 years old, and my dad started taking me. I had to prove my worth. So for the first 2-3 months of that season, I was taken by my Uncle Kerry to see East Fife to see if I could cope with, you know, being in a sort of big crowds at a football.
Disappointment. Cope with disappointment, Gregor.
Ah, exactly. I think my first 2 months of that season were at East Fife, going to Bayview with Uncle Kerry for a few games. And then eventually I was graduated up to the big show. So first game was Falkirk at home in mid-October. I haven't checked the dates when it was, but we won 2-0. Two Ian Ferguson goals. Very fond memories of it. I remember just mostly being running about and kind of, you know, being not actually being that hugely probably interested in the game, but the bug quickly caught. So that was it. So my mate and I both started going that season. My mate, interestingly, who's now still my best mate 40 years later, he was a Celtic fan when I first met him, and I mean first met him in that we were both only five, and with about half an hour of booing him, when we met at nursery, he soon became a United fan. A decision which he blames me for, stroke thanks me for to this day. And that season we got funny because he got to go to the Scottish Cup final. I didn't, because it was too big a game, and I was quite small, so I think it was all to do with that. But he was allowed to go with his dad, but I didn't get taken. And also I didn't get to any of the big European nights. So I only was allowed to go to the league games at that point. So the first season was obviously brilliant. I do remember I've got some great memories of being at home watching the away games for the European run with my dad and my brother of that season. So yeah, it was a good first season to be involved in as a United fan. I remember all the latter parts of the season really well. It was, you know, it's stuck with me, obviously. So
when you went to Tannadice, St. Gregor, whereabouts did you stand, or were you sat on the wall at the front anywhere?
Aye, so my cousins who were in Dundee, they were all United fans as well. So we all the dads, like my dad and my uncle, stood what's now the George Fox, and we were all behind the shed right at the front. We had cups of boiling hot orange and the like. So we loved the shed, so that's where we were. We'd meet up with them after the game, but we would be in the shed and they would be in the, I didn't even know what it was called before, it was the George Fox, but that's where they were at the back, and we would always be at the front of the shed with all the boys. So
it was a dangerous game standing in the shed back in their days.
It was, aye, but it was really real, really visceral, and some great memories of just, you know, surging at the front and just, you know, just being up to hijinks, and you know, it was just so much fun.
A totally interactive process,
I guess, that football has become less of these days, in my experience. You know, it's much less milling about and mean people, but that was great. Like, you know, that whole period up until obviously the stadium was redeveloped, absolutely being in the shed, it was great. And then when the shed was redeveloped, we then went to the East Stand, stroke Eddie Thompson Stand, for our season tickets after that. But yeah.
Who would have been this kind of early heroes that you'd have been drawn towards in those years?
Well, I mean, Sturrock and that were just, I mean, I think Sturrock had, when he started getting his injury problems, he was like 88, didn't he? That was when he started playing less. So the first players I loved were Christian Daly and Duncan Ferguson. They were the first ones that I really noticed, probably, in terms of like having that swagger and that kind of, that verve, I guess. But I always loved Maurice Malpass as well. Just, you know, I think as a kid, you don't really gravitate towards defensive players, but sort of as the older I got, the more I got to learn about football, and just Malpass became probably my hero, just because he was just like an 8 out of 10 every week. He just hardly ever
made it look easy.
He just never really had a bad game. I mean, probably he did, but looking back, he was just always so consistent. You know, he was just 8, 9, 10 out every week, you know, and as the years went on, he became my sort of, you know, probably my all-time United favourite player of the years I watched him, because he was so consistent. But all the youngkins that were coming through that point, and you know, it was a great time, wasn't it? Because every time you turned up at Tannadice, there was always some, you know, youngster waiting to get on off the bench, and they very rarely did disappoint. They were always fairly exciting to watch.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what would did somebody buy you a strip? And if so, what was the first strip that you had?
First strip was VG strip. I got that my first season.
Classic.
So I don't think it was fit now, but I wish I still had it. But I had the
stretch out a wee bit.
I had the VG strip, and then I had the Belhaven one that was still Adidas, and then it was all the Buckter ones and the Asics and all that. So now, but I had the VG strip. I had the orange one, so. Yeah, it's great. I wish I still had it, but it's probably sitting on some auction site right now, and it's worth about £600.
You were mentioning there, obviously, coming in at that time. What would have been your first sort of cup final then?
I didn't get to go to the 87 cup final, as I said, but I got to go to the 88 cup final. That was my first cup final.
So disappointment at an early age.
Well, it wasn't disappointing until the very end, was it? It was great. True. It was all going well, but that was my first one. I was there with my dad and my two brothers, and that was the Maggie Thatcher Cup final, and she was there, I think.
Yep, she was. Yep. We were all holding up red leaflets with something like stick your poll tax up your arse on it.
Yeah, it was something like that. So I remember obviously just being so excited to get to my first cup final, and it was great up until the last, 20 minutes when and those two goals went in. But it was great. And then the 91 Cup final, we went, it was kind of interesting because they call it the Family Cup final, but actually it was the way, I don't know why it worked out that way, but the football was always a man's thing when I went, you know, I was young. It was, you know, it was what we did. But for some reason, my mum was at the 91 Cup final, as well as like my auntie and a whole other bunch of my family that never got to the final. And my friend who was telling you about who turned into a Dundee United supporter from her age, he was there as well. And my biggest memory of that one is that obviously amazing game. And I think it, like, we never used to leave games early, but it got to the point where Motherwell scored the goal in extra time and we thought, oh, that's it. So we just left like a minute early, but of course United scored and they got chopped off for offside. And we ran back in. And my mate and I had all our face painted, and of course we ran back in, it had been chopped off offside, and we just started crying. We just had this screaming down our faces just because we were absolutely gutted. And that was like the first game I actually cried, but I was just so devastated because it'd been the second one, obviously. And I thought, well, it's never going to happen, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, there's a few people thought that day.
Aye, but thankfully I did the next one, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah, it was an amazing day in 94. I say we've covered it so many times, but the kind of memories of that day is still, you know, certainly with me. I mean, I still remember jumping in the minibus outside McAdams and Hilltown to drive through to it and stuff. And it was it was amazing, you know. And we've heard some funny stories about people missing the goal and everything like that. Is it as clear as day? Did it take as long as, no, quite as long as Jimmy Max to go in for the semi-final? But it took a while, didn't it, for that to go in?
Took a while, aye. No, I was at every game in that run. My dad and I went to every single game. Went to that both game at the start, went to all the replays.
Was it a 60-yard screamer for Brewster?
To be fair, I think it was about 35, 40 yards. It was about that. Because there's no footage, isn't there? There's no footage of it. Also.
That's how it keeps getting further and further away. It would be a place kick in a couple of years.
Well, that's one of the games that I was at, but didn't remember anything about it. Like, nothing.
Yeah. I remember it all clear as day. That game. I remember it was, not obviously, it was at Broth, so it was absolutely cold and windy and horrendous. But no, the way it worked out for the final was that my dad and I were season holders, and my mates who'd obviously got my friend, my old friend Craig, who'd been going to years for football for years at that point, but there was another couple of mates who'd now started coming by that point. And they were all sitting separate to me and my dad because we'd been season holders, so we got our tickets priority. It was there to get their tickets. Afterwards, and so I guess what you'd call it, the general sales. So there was a wee party, I wish I was sitting with my pals and my dad. But the way it transpired, I was glad I was sitting with my dad because sadly I lost him to Alzheimer's in 2007. So that's that memory I've got with him, of us winning the cup. And we were right near the front, but perfectly on the angle for when from Brewster's run to go home. So that's like a really good memory. And it's because it was with my dad, it was the only sort of trophy that I saw United lift while he was still here. It's one that sticks long in the memory. I don't think that memory will ever fade. And my mates talked about after the game that when we all came out of the stadium, we had to meet up with my pals because my dad had driven us all through. So my mate Craig describes that when my dad saw us, or when he saw them, like he just launched into this jig, this dance, and he was just dancing about, you know. And that was the memory, and just going bananas at that point. Obviously, and it was just an incredible couple of days, and then going up to Dundee for the trophy parade and stuff as well. So it was absolutely tremendous. I think.
Yeah,
it's that's obviously one of the highs. Then, like, what are your highs and lows in your time of following United?
Oh, this could take a while.
We've got all day.
The highs won't take that long. The lows will take. obviously after that, I think then the next one was. Although obviously the relegation was pretty grim after that, but I think the Tommy McQueen season was one of my favourite seasons in Fulham United. Went to pretty much every game that season, and just the football was just—it's what I would call classic United football. It was just so. I mean, mine uses the term swashbuckling, and that's exactly what it was. It was just fast, you know, counter attacking, powerful, great team, everybody contributing. I think that was probably one of my favourite United teams, just as a team. I just thought they were brilliant to watch. I loved Eric Pederson, loved the engagement he had for the crowd, you know, that character, that total passion he had, which I hope was genuine, but it worked because it really got United fans going. And just that season was just so good. I remember going to the away game with my brother at Ibrox when we won 2-0. Ray McKinnon and Olsen. I think it was 2-0.
I think so, yeah.
I had two absolute peaches of goals and just tore them apart that night, absolutely tore them apart. So that was a really great memory for that season. But so that season was just so good. We went from, you know, had been nothing, you know, under that period, we'd come back up under Kirkwood, and then suddenly we were kind of transformed and finishing third and just been, you know, tremendous, just so good to watch, so exciting. And yeah, the whole Scandinavian thing was great, you know, with the helmets and all that, and it was just such a strong sense of identity at that point of being a United fan. It was great. And then obviously, you know, I kind of tapped out for quite a few years of there, and not he's just good stuff that was going on with me. But I guess then the next time was when Levein came in, and that came to that whole area culminating in the Scottish Cup win. And which again, you know, I don't think anybody needs to tell him how good it was, or sort of the transformation that taken place quite quickly from we'd kind of lost our way, and we would kind of, I get the feeling where we are just now, but Levein just completely came in and reinvigorated the club, and that sort of identity was totally clear again. But and obviously the Scottish Cup win in 2010 was great. I wouldn't say it's quite as impactful as the first one. It was the first one definitely had made more of an impact, but it was almost kind of weird because staying up with 15-20 minutes to go, we knew we'd won it. It was kind of like, this feels oddly easy, you know. So kind of, it didn't feel like it was earned as much, whereas the, you know, 94 Cup final, it was, you know, nail biting till the end, and the saves that Guido made, and whereas that one, it was great, but we went into it
as favourites as well, Gregor. Like if we hadn't have won that cup final, then Christ, we would have still been speaking about it to this day. But for all the different reasons, whereas the Rangers were going for a double treble, you know, they were massive, massive favourites. Yeah. And as you say, because we were only 1-0 up, and it felt like the Alamo, the second half that lasted forever. So I totally agree with you. That one does seem a wee bit better. It warms my heart a wee bit in there.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I think like when the full time whistle went in 94, it was joy and relief. But I think the relief is probably the biggest part. I've done it because it was just, you know, been a curse or whatever that we hadn't done it in the previous six times. So, but I think 2010 it was just much more a party and kind of, you know, like you say, we're the favourites. So it did have a different feeling, but you know, it was still absolutely brilliant. But
I mean, I'm amazed you've not mentioned the Edinburgh Cup yet.
It's coming.
But against who was it? It was St Mirren, was it?
St Mirren. Come on now, Gregor. Who was it against? I seen you there that day.
I was working way down south at that point. So
lucky you.
I can't be grim that whole period doing that. It was pretty grim. I don't think we've recovered really from that, to be honest. So.
Talking of grim, how are you summing up this season?
I'll have to watch what I say, given I'm also here in a slightly professional capacity with the foundation. But pretty tough to watch, to be honest. Pretty sickened by just the situation that we're in. I think a lot of people have seen it coming. I would say I've seen it coming a mile off. It feels to me like there's just a real lack of leadership in many areas of the club and the team. But it's painful to watch, really, because I think ultimately we're going to get what we deserve. Because I think probably we got relegated in, you know, 95 and the one in 2015-2016. I think we were poor, but I don't think we were kind of as weak as what we were, as what we are now. I just feel like we're really weak. And you know, I think for me the one thing about United, and a lot of this comes back actually to the stuff that I talk about in the changing room, we talk a lot about identity, and I think the club's perhaps lost its way in terms of its identity a bit. I think, like, for me, the way you summarise the club's identity, for me, is by the young players that you produce. And I think, obviously, for a lot of years, United had a really strong identity of producing, you know, the best young players in Scotland. And that was just, that's fact. You know, we produced more talented young players than anyone. And I think that's where we got our identity from. You know, as I said at the start, when you went about United in the 80s and the 90s and, you know, parts of the noughties, you were always pretty confident when we had a young player on the bench, he was going to come on and do something special, you know. And I think your young players give you that because you've grown them, because you've nurtured them, you've looked after them. And I think for all the stuff that's supposedly going on at United, I think that identity has been lost, because I think we're no developing our players, we're no developing the club. And I think we're trying to be something that we're not. And I think we've got our way of developing players. It's always worked in the past, and I think we've probably tried to change that too much and make it a bit too complex. And I think that for me is that loss of identity has kind of made us think, you know, who are we as a club and where are we going? And I think there's a real, between the fans, there's not a certainty of who we are, you know, anymore. Because I think there's a lack of proper vision and leadership, I would say, in terms of that actually strong identity of who Dundee United are. And I think that's what's been reflected on the pitch. I just think, you know, I was talking about players like Eric Pederson, and, you know, all the players we've had over the years are just brilliant characters. And that's what we're lacking in football generally is characters. And I say that in terms of, you know, players being able to go out and show their personality both when they're playing and after the game, you know, and that sort of engagement with the fans. And that I've seen that a couple of times. I think Behic has been quite, you know, good at engaging with the fans. And, you know, he started off, he struggled, but he's got better as the season went on. He's probably one of the few positives, but he seemed to have a fairly decent engagement with the fans. I think like, and it goes across all levels of football, and it's not just Dundee United, but I think like you just see a lack of character in players these days. And even in interviews, it's like they almost didn't want to show who they are, you know, and be proud of who they are and the unique qualities they bring to the team. You know, I love, you know, Shifshi for all his madness. You were excited to go on the Saturday afternoon because you weren't sure what was going to happen. You know, it was exciting. Yeah. And players get you off your seat, you know, whether it's through the skill, you know, and, you know, players we've had before, like, you know, Swanson and just all these really naturally gifted players, you thought, you know, this player's got something, he's going to get me off my seat. And I just didn't think we've had that this season at all. I think that's what I've been missing. And that's, I think that's why it's been such a struggle to go and watch it, because despite the results and where we are, I think if you're watching an exciting team, you know, with players that were really expressive, and, you know, you'd be much more inclined to kind of really, you know, be on, I think. But I think there's an air of resignation, because it just doesn't feel like there's that character to the team, that spine of the team, where you've got, you know, these characters are kind of pulling everyone together in the same direction.
Don't know what you think about that. No, it's a really good point, well made. And, you know, it's been a long, long slog. And I think, again, the past couple of years has been a strange sort of lost, you know, last year finishing fourth, somebody had to finish fourth. Do we deserve to finish fourth? There's arguments for it and against it. So it's been a real, yeah, it's been a real interesting few years. Before we get your 10 and 6's team, because we love getting them, You did mention the changing room. It's one of the reasons you're on today. Tell us about it.
Well, I work for SAMH, which is Scotland's Association for Mental Health, and for the last 5 years we've been running and developing a programme called The Changing Room. And simply, The Changing Room is a programme we work in partnership with Movember, who are sort of main sort of men's charity around the planet. So they fund us, but we work in partnership with the Scottish Professional League, the football, the charity trust of the SPFL. And we work with a number of the clubs around Scotland. So we're basically, the programme is for men aged 30 to 64, although we do now have just launched recently a younger women's changing room programme, but the programme has by and large been designed for men aged 30 to 64. And it's basically, we work in partnership with United Community Trust, and we work to basically support men aged 30 to 64, the mental health men who are either United supporters or even not United supporters. They could be Dundee supporters. But we have a programme at Tannadice that we run, and the programme is basically there to help men aged 30 to 64 with their mental health, to support them if they're struggling. But also, if you are just want to learn more about your mental health and have a greater understanding of it, in terms of maybe seeing it as an opportunity to keep your mental health fit in the same way you would be your physical health. So we have a lot of guys that come on to our programmes, and they're not necessarily struggling with a mental illness. They're actually just wanting to find more and to keep that kind of muscle worked, so they're learning more about their mental health or talk about it. So we have a 12-week programme, and the programme is all based around football, based around Dundee United. Sessions are delivered at Tannadice, and they're open and free to anyone who's aged 30 to 64. We do a variety of activities throughout the 12 weeks. We have a stadium tour. We do a couple of walking talks around the pitch. We have a guest speaker, and we do a walking football session. Everything we do is based on the narrative and the language of football. So it's that's why it's really appealing, works for the guys that do come on. The sessions are about mental health, but they're not done in a way that faces any pressure or any emphasis on anyone. So when you come onto the sessions, there's no round table, you know, self-help group kind of vibe. It's nothing like that. It's literally men talking about football, having a laugh, having a bit of crack, and also learning more about mental health as the weeks go on. The structure of the programme in such a way, I suppose, that that journey is really interesting and really fun and really interactive. As I say, we don't put any pressure on anyone to talk about themselves or to feel like they have to divulge something that they're not comfortable doing. If someone, as the weeks go on, feels like they want to do that, then the room is always an open space and a safe space to talk about what's going on. And that's what we've found. So we think it's a brilliant programme. We know it works because we've seen the results. And yeah, I mean, obviously, as a United fan, I'm keen for as many United fans as possible to have access to the service when we launch it again next month. I mean, I've been in position now for about 18 months, just over 18 months, and I've been through a couple of changing rooms sort of as an observer when I was sort of learning the role. And I've seen the journey that some of the guys go on, and it's frankly, it's amazing the changes in some of the men from just coming along and engaging. So I would encourage anyone who's either struggling or who wants to know about their mental health, if they're living in Dundee or the United fan or they're just out with the city, if they can get to Dundee, is to come on and get involved in the sessions. I'm sure you've probably got some questions for me, but that's the general gist of it. We work in the same partnership with the United Community Trust, so all the sessions take place at Dundee. So it's a great way for guys who've maybe not seen in our sanctum to get in there and sort of see what goes on behind the scenes. As I say, that environment makes all the difference to those conversations happen naturally over the 12-week course. So we know it works, and it's a, you know, as I say, it's as much about making new friends, meeting new people, you know, having these open discussions about mental health, but also having a crack and having a laugh, which is what it always is in the sessions I've been involved in delivering.
Can I ask you, Gregor, how did you get involved in this? Is it from your own experience that's made you want to do this, or is it just something that you fancied doing as a profession?
Well, I've my background's sort of sports science and coaching. I've kind of worked in football development for the throw, and I'd always wanted to work in kind of sport and football, and that kind of always been my ambition since going back to university in my late 20s. But I ended up kind of for my own mental health reasons, I ended up kind of falling out of that sort of pathway around about sort of 2017. And then eventually ended up working in kind of shop fitting and site management, stuff like that, kind of just through a strange connection. So I'd want to get back into sport in some capacity. So I applied for the role. It was just at the end of COVID. I applied for the role. I saw it was about football, which obviously I'm a lifelong fan. And I've had my own mental health struggles. You know, I'm quite open about that over the last sort of 5-6 years, especially. But you know, for a big part of my adult life, struggled quite majorly with depression and anxiety. So I'm very passionate about in terms of what I give back, and I think hopefully my sort of level of personal what we call lived experience is something that's an asset when I'm sort of delivering the program and working with the guys. But I'm really passionate about normalising men's mental health and sort of, you know, making those conversations happen, because they're happening more, but they're not happening enough yet. I mean, that through the statistics to do with people that died by suicide, which is still far, far too high. So, through my own personal lived experience, it's something that I'm really passionate about changing. And I think the vehicle we've got for making change in Scotland with a change room is really, really effective. And I've seen firsthand the impact this had. So yeah, I think I bring hopefully some personal experience, which is always never about me when we're doing sessions, but I think I know through conversations with the guys that, you know, that me being able to reflect upon my experiences can sometimes, you know, help, I guess, lubricate the conversation somewhat, you know. It's so yeah, it's something I'm not shy about and quite open and honest about. So it takes me a while to get there, and it's not easy as a man to think you can do, you know. It's not in your programming to talk about these things openly, but it's definitely the best thing to do. So hopefully through the changing journey, the guys understand that, you know, not keeping these things to yourself is a good thing, you know, and sharing how you're feeling is the best way to deal with things, because it makes you realise that you're not alone. You know, everyone's got a different story. You know, all the guys come to changing room would say they've all had their own separate journeys, but they've all ended up at the same destination at the same time. So we think that getting together and being in a safe space where you realise it's okay to talk about these things and how you're feeling is the best way to deal with things. So we encourage those conversations a lot. As I say, they happen naturally as the course goes on. You know, there's never any focus on anyone to talk about things that they don't want to.
The changing room, it started in 2018. What's the journey been like for it over the last 5 years then, since it launched to where it is now?
Yeah, but I mean, it's gone really from launching initially at Hibs. Hibs were the initial founding partner. So Sam H made an application to November to get funding to formulate the program, and that was successful. So the initial trial partner was Hibs, and that went well there. So then Hearts became involved as well, Big Hearts, who are the foundation of Hearts. And the program just went from strength to strength. This was obviously before I came on board, but my two colleagues, Fair and Doogie, have been running the program for the sort of last 4 or 5 years, and they've taken the changing room to where it was when I came in. And we've now rolled out the program to 23, 24 different clubs in the SPFL, and that ranges from most of the clubs in the SPFL down to the very bottom of the pyramid. We've trained up coaches at the community foundations across those clubs to be able to deliver the changing room themselves. So initially it was just my boss and Fair and Doogie who were delivering the programme at Hearts and Hibs, but we want to make the programme sustainable and to hit more geographical areas. So what we've done is we've trained up the coaches at the community foundations at all the clubs, and they're now out delivering the changing room themselves. And the most pleasing thing is that since we sort of gave up a little bit of that control, the research and the findings that the programme's still been effective as what it was. So it's not really about us delivering it as facilitators, it's about the guys that come in and interact. And that's the most important thing, because we describe ourselves as the groundsman. That's kind of what we are. We just facilitate the conversation. But the men that come into the programme and engage with it are the sort of the players on the field. They're the ones that make the difference, So what we've done is we've just made more facilitators who are making these conversations happen. And we see the men as the real proponents for change, in the journeys that they take, because we're just setting the scene. It's the men that are coming and walking through the door that are making the difference to themselves. We try not to take any credit for that. And the great thing now is we're now all the big clubs pretty much across the SPL. Having really good success in terms of the recruitment and engagement, and also, the stories that we're hearing back from those clubs, the journeys that the men are going on. So, yeah, as of now, we're at, I think, 24 clubs, and we've also just got our first grassroots level club involved, going off their stores. They're launching their first changing room next month, which is great, and that's the first time that's happened, so we're interested to see how that works out. So they're our first grassroots club, and that's hopefully a model that will work out as well. My role was specifically to grow another program, which is called Changing Room Extra Time, which is another program that we've pinned on to the back of the changing room. So once the guys have been to the changing room, we've offered them at certain clubs. We're all doing it at four clubs at the moment, which is Hearts, Hibs, Aberdeen and Rangers, the capacity to go on and experience extra time. So it's a program that I've been engaged in over the last 18 months to kind of develop the structure and the content for that. And that's basically taking the journey one step further. Once the guys have been through the changing room, it's about going a little bit further in terms of thinking of behavioural change, reducing or minimising negative behaviours and increasing and promoting positive behaviours. So again, it's all based around the narrative of football, but it's a slightly shorter programme. It's six sessions doubled over 11 weeks. But for the guys at those clubs, there's the option to go on and go through extra time as well. So we're hopeful that will grow as well in time as with the changing has done over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. Yeah, we're excited to keep growing the program, and it's going from strength to strength. We're seeing good numbers in terms of the guys that come out, and that's the kind of the key indicator, because we know it's still not easy for men to come out and have these conversations. I say to the guys that come to the program, in terms of walking through that door for the first time, we know what to expect, or we know what they should expect, which is a friendly, open, safe space for having a laugh, having a conversation and talking about things, talking about your for them, they didn't know that. So when men are walking through the door for the first time, that's a really brave thing to do. And we're encouraged by, as the months go on and programs start, there are more and more men willing to do that. So that's the biggest thing that we look for in terms of just, hopefully getting men who are ready to take that journey with us.
You mentioned the change room. It is a 12-week course. How can people get more information? How can they sign up and everything else?
Well, we have a coach at Dundee United, Lindsay, who actually runs and facilitates the programme. I come in for sort of two or three sessions to run specific sessions that we still run. So we run two sessions that will always be delivered by a SAMH employee, by myself or Fair or Doogie. But in terms of signing up, they can just drop Dundee United an email or they can drop me an email. If they want to email me in the first instance, that's absolutely fine. Have a chat with them about what the programme's involved in. But there's no cost. It's just come along. You know, there's always tea, coffee, biscuits, sometimes pies. So it's, you know, there's no sign up process. There's no like filling out forms before you get to the session. So it's really easy to just come along and get involved. So yeah, that's something. Just, you know, drop us a line if you're interested and we'll get back to you and give you more information that you need.
Perfect. We'll be sure to share those details across our socials. We'll stick stuff in the show notes as well. Gregor, thank you very much. Before we let you go, it's time for you to pick your Terence Sixes team.
If I'd thought about this all weekend, that's all we'd have thought about. So I've not overthought it. So I thought I would just do it naturally on the spot.
We like it. We like it. Goalkeeper first.
It's obvious, is it not? The Australian boy.
People, I'm going to go for Seeb.
Big Seeb is in.
I'm talking Maverick about, between the sticks.
I'm talking about he was brilliant that season and all that couple of seasons. He was just tremendous. I'm talking about, and that's, I guess, I'm going to try and put my team into characters and kind of people that got you off your CI. So Seeb, defender Petrich.
Oof. But God, so how many defenders are we going for? We've got a formation in mind here.
No, God, just that's it's total football.
All right, Petrich is in, right? Okay. Petrich is in.
Robertson.
The Robertson's in.
Best one season I've seen by any debut from a player ever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has to be. Swanson.
Swan, Dino is in.
You can go past players for fun. I've probably the most naturally gifted Scottish player I've seen at United, I think.
Brilliant, brilliant player.
Brilliant. Great lad as well.
Midfield, centre midfield, I'd have to be. I'll have to go for Billy McKinley.
Oof, good God, player as well. In. Jeez.
It's a six team. You want players that are all going to score goals, eh? You want players that can all score.
But who is now going to be your main goal
scorer?
Who is
going to be the main man up front?
I've still got two left, haven't I?
That's you picked five. Seaman, Petrich, Swanson, Robertson and Badger. Oh.
It's got to be Brewster.
Oh, classic. Absolute classic.
It's off the shed.
I mean, I tell you what, if you're going to start and go with Seeb, you'll have Petrich in front of him. You've got Andy Robertson and Danny Swanson up and doing the wings if you want. You've got Badger in the middle of the park, and then you've got Brewster. I mean, a Spino team. You've got a keeper that'll take out centre-halves. He's in centre-halves for fun. I mean, that's a tough team, Paul. It's a tough team to beat that.
That's a good team. Here, they're all good teams. Nobody picks a duff six-a-side team. It's a very good team.
There's no way you could pick your favourite six United players of all time, is it? It's impossible. So I thought I would just spend too much time stressing about it. So I was like, no, I'm just going to do it on the board. Less the players that I had kind of spoken about, but
some people took it off serious. Some people, the reason we've started with the Terence Sixes side is because some people couldn't have picked Fev. That was our buddy Chris McIntosh. Yeah. Markers. Right. We asked him for his United five side team, and he thought this is unbeatable. Wait till you hear this. Gave with six names. So he was right. It probably was going to be unbeatable in the five side tournament, but he was cheating.
So you said there, Gregor, so you thought you had two left. Who would have been that other name?
We've got a subby.
There's too many. I think like Eric Pederson was just, I just loved Pederson. I hadn't seen anything like that before. And again, he was just, you know, had that couple of seasons where every time he played Rangers, he had loads up in his back pocket, and it was scary. He was so good. You know, like it was. He's one of my all-time favourites, and Shifshey, you know, and Daly.
Wait a minute. We're getting an 11 aside now, Rondo. This is getting out of hand.
Three subs and a six aside game. But it's tough. I mean, and again, the only thing we say is you need to at least have a goalkeeper. I'm still waiting on the day somebody will throw just five forwards at us and just say, crack on.
Go for it.
Keep it all day his bit and just chuck up the park.
you need a wee bit of balance. You need a wee bit of balance.
A little bit, but no, we appreciate that, Gregor. Thank you very much for coming on, sharing your United journey, and also all the stuff that Changing Room are doing. We'll be sure to share any of the links or whatever like that, your contact details and stuff, people can get in touch. Just very, very quick, apologies if you have mentioned it, when does the next 12-week course start?
Tuesday the 6th of June. Still waiting for confirmation in terms of access to the facilities, but it's going to be at the start of June. I believe it's going to be Tuesday the 6th. Anyone that's sitting, is listening to this and is either want to know more about their mental health, understand it more, or, you know, is needing a bit of help and support, is really, I do urge them to come along and just try it out and see what it's like, because we think it'll be, you know, a support to you. So we know it's a difficult step to make, but for the guys that come and engage with the programme, very few of them don't go through the 12 weeks. Most of the guys that come in for that first week, they're there for the 12 weeks, and there's a real community growing at all the different clubs. So we'd really urge anyone that's sitting there listening to this, come and give it a try yourself, get on.
Thank you very much to Gregor for coming on, speaking about what he's doing with the Changing Room at Tannadice, which will be starting at the start of June, and to also trying to get about 9 players in his United Dream 6 team. You know, it's boys are just at it these days, Ron. It started to be Makkers trying to shoehorn a 6 man into his 5-a-side team, and now we've got Gregor again with 9 names for his 6-a-side team. It's getting out of hand. But he was a great guest. It was very interesting, very informative listening to him about his own personal experience with mental health and what's on offer via the Changing Room that he's part of. So if you are interested in that, we will definitely be posting up links and contact details to get involved with that. And thank you very much again.
Dykstra, Petrich, McKinley, Swanson, Robertson, Brewster.
And then Shifty, and then Daly, and exactly, it went on and on. He was some boy.
Right, on this day, in association with the Arab Archive, preserving the history of Dundee United Football Club since 2006. We're getting to the time of the season when there's no much happening. But anyway, 22nd of May is our focus today. It's one game and one birthday to tell you about. Slim Pickens. It's a Forfarshire Cup semi-final win against Dundee in 1965.
I was at that game, Rondo, before you said it.
But it doesn't actually have match report, so you'll need to tell us.
Well, we won.
We did. 2-0. Our birthday boy, however. Wow. Just wow. Signed in 2016. Made 42 appearances. Scored 19 goals. Happy 35th birthday today to Tony Andrew.
Are you sending him a video like he sent you?
Aye, and I had to put my clothes on for it. Got it.
Tony Andrew, eh?
What player?
You're not aware of him yet. You're not aware of him.
No, I thought he was a great player.
He was a good player. I'm gonna hit a reel that word great back in. I don't think he was a great player. He was a good player. Mind the level we were at that season as well. He was a good player.
Great player. Right. It's Last Chance Saloon. Kilmarnock at home on Wednesday before a trip to Fir Park on Sunday. It's all to play for. It's staring us in the face. It's the proverbial 6-pointer and whatever else you want to add to it. How do you think we're going to go on? We're at Dode Fox Podcast on social media. Do have a great week. Stay safe. And don't forget to wash your hand and your arsehole.